All right, we're recording, and I haven't even angled my thing properly.
Oh
Hello.
my God.
We've done. It's been a while, hasn't it? It's been a minute. Has it?
We had that little impromptu one that you went
Oh
when we
yeah.
before the Divinity. But before that, yeah, I think it has been. I feel like we've. Oh, I thought we did one not long ago, but when you just said that, I was like, I don't think we did.
Yeah, I'm
Ooh.
recording this in a slightly different way today.
Yeah.
I'm screen capping one of my monitors because I'm on i3 now. So I went on ISWM, and that took a while to set up. My window manager, by the way, for those of you that don't know. And that was okay. That was fine. It's even though it's a window manager that's still being maintained, it did still feel kind of its time. It was good. I could
How did that actually manifest?
mostly in how wind like unusual windows were managed was really
Yeah.
it. So like a lot of Steam games, a lot of mostly like Steam games and things like that, things that weren't necessarily made for Linux and
I think that is the point where that's always the point where DWM has issues is Steam games that don't set whatever flags correctly or whatever. I don't really understand that stuff. GameScope does entirely fix that on DWM, which is nice.
GameScope's amazing. If you don't, folks at
Yeah.
home, if you don't know GameScope, it's easy to install because it's in my Debian repositories. So it'll be in like Arch repositories or Ubuntu repositories, I'm certain of. But if you ever have problems like, so for those of you playing Grand Theft Auto 3 on multi-monitors, you will know this is a problem on Windows 2, that the cursor leaves the window and it's basically impossible to play without some kind of modifying it. I used to play it in Wine where it would like draw a virtual desktop, but now I just play it in GameScope and it captures the cursor perfectly. Which is interesting because there are native Linux methods to play Grand Theft Auto 3 that work okay. It is a bit of a hack around, but you need to install full-blown mods on Windows. So older games work better on Linux than they do on Windows. I always
They
attest to
really
this.
do. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, GameScope has two sort of plus points. I watched your video the other day actually, and you said all this really, but one of them is, yeah, the upscaling. I've got a 1440 monitor and a not particularly strong computer, so I upscale from 1080 to 1440, and it looks like I couldn't really tell the difference.
No.
It upscales nicely. And the other
And I
one is,
do.
yeah, just go on, sorry.
I go from 720 to 1080, and
Yeah,
I can somewhat tell the difference, but not to the point where I'd rather have things like draw distance and maybe some nice shadows rather than that extra bit of resolution. So it's.
The other one is misbehaving windows, like you said. Yeah, any game that you used to have to run in a virtual desktop in Wine or anything like that, or anything that just is doesn't like you tabbing out, especially on DWM, which doesn't reparent the windows. Yeah, it solves all that, so it makes every game just fit into. And what it's doing is pretending to be a monitor. It's pretending to be the only monitor, and then it just presents that monitor to the game, and then that monitor is just a window that you can do whatever with. It's
So
lovely.
yeah,
It's the only use I've found for Wayland.
it's great. Is GameScope. Otis has just got into the room. One of the things I actually like about ICE, not i3 that I'm on now, is that it handles all the windows as I want to. Like, not, it doesn't even miss a beat. And how it so in I don't even think in GameScope, I think in just games in Steam, it'll put it into like a an ICE an i3 window, but it will just like it will just what do you call it sort of scale it to fit, but it won't squash it. It will just
That
and then
depends
you
on the
can
game. Some games will fit to the window, and some games will just letterbox to or pillar box to the window.
But like usually it letterboxes in my experience because I can't remember if I've got GameScope. Me and Rosie have been playing a lot of Portal co-op and really testing the relationship. And when it loads up onto half a window or whatever, then it just letterboxes. But yeah, like if there's something that works, like a lot of stuff nowadays is made for the mobiles, or either made for mobile, which is the vertical, or it's made with what's the term, like reactive or adjustable resolutions.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Can't think of a
word.
So
stuff,
but I know what you
stuff
mean, yeah.
fits into the frame like really quite well. So I got to be honest. Also, I went in. I'm sort of a little bit trying to emulate your workflow a little bit. I don't have the bars.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone without the bars.
Yeah, you said that. Yeah, I think that's good. I think. I mean, we've had this conversation several times. I don't see the point of a taskbar. It just wastes space. The system tray, I understand somewhat. I do understand your arguments for the system tray somewhat. But the bar itself, which is buttons representing the windows, I've got the windows representing the windows.
Yeah, well, particularly in Tyler's. Although sometimes I will put a window onto a desktop and I won't know, I'll forget which desktop that is. Like if I'm doing something, like if I've got like a torrent client open, I'm going to throw that to like desktop 8 or whatever, right? Like...
Mm.
And I'm going to forget that it's there. What would be nice is if there was like an alt tab where you have a full list of windows to go through. I'm sure there's a program that I could probably bring in for that.
DWM does have that. On DWM Workspace 0 shows all windows. And then if you put the bar on, you can see which workspace they're on. But I think I'd never use that because I think over time you just form patterns where particular windows always go to particular numbers. And you get into habits. So, you know.
Well, I've worked out. So, there's only one thing, one sort of unusual adjustment I've had to make for i3, and that's my Phylon Cloud Sync, right? I love Phylon. I definitely recommend them. I can't recommend them enough. I think I've got an affiliate link on like my website or whatever because I think I might have actually like maxed out my affiliate bonuses. So I don't even know if it's like a small German company. It's encrypted on client side. They don't scan or none of that stuff. They have a client, the native Linux client, runs really well. But if it runs in the system tray, I don't have a system tray, so I don't. If you've got a system tray in i3, you're fine. Mm-hmm. But I loaded it up on desktop 10 or desktop 0, whatever, you know, and it just sits there. So if I want to make sure that I'm syncing properly and everything's up to date, I just do modern 0, and then I check, and then I go modern back to whatever I do.
I think that's something where I think Tyler's do. I mean, certainly true for me, and it's definitely true for other people. I often hear other people saying this. When I started using a Tyler, I just started using the terminal more.
Yes, I do that too now. Yeah,
just kind of go hand in hand. And I think you realize that a lot of what you wanted a GUI for before is actually quicker, easier in the terminal. Not always, not everything, but a lot of things. Start doing like some file management and searching, you know, and renaming, batch renaming, stuff like that, all on the command line. And stuff like, if I want to know whether something's working, I'll do like, you know, the status command.
Yeah.
And if I do it a lot, I'll make an alias for it. So just, yeah, I'm sure there must be a command line thing you can do to check, you know, whatever you want to check in the GUI interface. The modern way of doing that.
Well, I do that with the notification send stuff. If I do modern V, and people at home can see what's happening, it's just listed out all my VPN, like, is the kill switch enabled? Which country am I connected to? Am I connected? So that just makes sure that I know where I am when it comes to that kind of stuff. What I got modern O for o'clock, that's my mnemonic, and that gives me today's date, time, and then time in New York, Los Angeles, and Brisbane, Australia, which carries over from XFCE, actually. Have I got anything else? Oh, I've got modern Y, and that copies YYYYMMDD date to the clipboard.
Yeah,
I name a lot of my files. Chronologically, so that just makes life a bit easier.
You might be able to do that with an alias.
I think I tried to do that. Might even be that's a bash script that is just linked to a. Mm. But what I could do if I wanted to be really odd about it is have like a bash-c thing inside of i3 and just put that little bash script inside of the i3 config file. But then that just makes my i3 config file some kind of monster. I've been trying to like tidy up my bash-rc file because I'm using the console a bit more. And I made some mistakes along the way there, but I've managed to sort them out. But I kind of feel like I'm learning a bit more about some of the config files. Like, I always knew about bash-rc, I always knew about X resources, but like I'm really like becoming familiar with them at the moment because I've switched my terminal. I wanted to really like question my, like, I've been on XFCE for like years now, and I'm just so happy with it. Like, it just sits exactly. If I want to change my workflow in any way, it is customizable to that degree. However, I wanted to see like, I was like playing around with file managers, GUI file managers, because it's like, well, I'm on Thunar. Thunar does everything I needed to do, but is there something that's a bit more lightweight or a bit more like desktop independent that does the same kind of job? I think the long answer for that is maybe no, because one of the things I like about Thunar, it's a really, like, you know when you get like one of these, like in your workflow, you get one of these like really weird edge case things that only one program does, is that with Thunar, if you open a folder with a large number of thumbnails, be them video, be them pictures or whatever, it only loads thumbnails on the visible part of the window. Whereas with the more lightweight manager like PCManFM, which is, you know, like almost just as good, it will generate all of the thumbnails in the directory that you're currently in, which if you've got a lot of photographs in a directory.
Yeah, that holds you up.
That holds you. It holds you up. Yeah. And then the fan starts spinning up. And I think it's I think it's designed so that you keep them in the cache, but I clear my cache on a regular basis. So it's a little bit. So I have kind of gone back to Thunar. I was looking at, I used the Thunar, not the Thunar, the XFCE screenshot utility quite a lot. That was my, and I've gone to using like an image magic command for that. It's not quite as polished, but it's good enough. So I just do, I think it's Control and S, and then I can either select a window or select a square. And then it dates and saves it in my temporary pictures folder, and then I'll do with that as well.
I'd recommend MAME for that. MAME is very good.
Oh, okay. I'll give MAME a go. It was on the list of
MAIM. I have a key combo for just screenshot the whole screen, and I have a key combo for draw a box and screenshot that and put it on my clipboard. That's MAME and SLOP. SLOP is the thing that draws the rectangle, and then MAME is the thing that takes the rectangle and takes a screenshot. And
MAME and SLOP. That sounds like a bad Hitman's to-do list.
And I've got it so that it puts it on my clipboard. It puts it in a folder on my computer, and it also sticks it up on my web server as well.
Oh, okay. Is your web server an Oracle thing, or is it your Raspberry Pi?
No, it's just an Oracle thing.
I keep thinking about having a home, like having a dedicated home web server, but then it still means leaving a box on, you know, like a lot. So this computer is acting as our home web server, which is running Jellyfin, which is pretty good, to be honest.
You're going to say about terminal though. What terminal?
Oh, terminal. Yeah. Okay. So I've currently been on mostly like because I kind of know it and I'm learning it a bit better. I've been on UXTerm because it's like pre-installed on like most distributions. It's super lightweight, and if you like me only use the basic bits and pieces of a terminal, then presumably XTerm is as good as I was on XFCE4 terminal, which is fine. I like that terminal, but it, you know, I'm trying to like be a bit more like, you know, make slightly more conscious choices, a bit more like desktop independent choices, because it's easy enough to go to i3 and it's easy enough to then just use my XFCE tools within i3, and I'd be happy like that, but I'm kind of like poking and prodding and seeing what what else is out there. Really, I feel like, I don't know, I'm in that mood, I've got that like itch to scratch where
Yeah, I've actually had that it lately. I want to try other things. I want to try different desktops, but I'm cursed by having found the perfect setup for me.
Mm.
It's really fucking annoying. It's genuinely annoying. Like, I want to try other things, but every time I try other things, I'm like, yeah, it's good, but DWM's better.
Yeah. I can see myself moving away from i3 to BSPWM because yeah, what I actually... The only thing about BSP... Like, i3 handles the awkward windows so well, and it... I don't know. I kind of like... it's set. You know, it's nice. Yeah. That they have one config file for all of the stuff. I've actually been looking at trying to find ways of backing up my .dot files. And I'd wonder how you do this, because I've got I want to back up, for example, bash RC, which is in the home directory, X resources, which is in the home directory, i3 config, which is in the .config i3 directory. There's probably like a few more, and it's like, at the moment, I've actually backed up my entire .config directory, but there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that I don't really, if I was to reinstall, would...
The solution for that is something called Stow.
Oh, okay.
STOW, which I think is a GNU thing. What that basically does is you put all your config stuff in one folder.
Mm-hmm.
You create a file hierarchy within that folder. And then what Stow does, you just run it, and it symlinks them all into the correct places. So you have one folder that you can back up that has your configs in. And if you move to another computer, you just take that folder, run the Stow command, and it symlinks them all into place, and you're ready to go.
That's amazing. Yes. I've considered doing that by hand.
Yeah. Stow takes quite care of it, somewhat automatically. Yeah.
I GitLab
that folder, and that's all. That's where all my dots are.
All right. Okay. I'm gonna do that, because also I've got some programs that do stuff with encryption. My dot config, sometimes they put the encrypted stuff in the dot config, which is useless to me.
You have to be careful with that. Like, when I'm setting up MUT, I think I initially just put my password in my MUT config file, and I was like, "Hang on, that's about it." In the MUT config, you can put a command. So I put MUT calls pass to get my password automatically.
Okay. I think I'd like to set up MUT at some point, but last time I did it, I got lost and gave up. So I might. But I feel a bit more confident now, so I might give that a go, because otherwise I just use the web client, which is really good as well for Postio.
Yeah,
it's really lightweight.
MUT is one of those where once you've got it configured, it's beautiful. Mm. But there are so many choices. You can configure everything.
Mm.
It's almost building your email client from components. So it takes a long time to set it up. It really does.
Is there alternatives? I don't need anything particularly advanced.
What's that one called? There is a more, I think it's written in Go, so it's fairly recent. I'll find it off air, because I'm not going to remember. I don't want to just sit here commenting on my own, but yeah, there is a more recent one that works more like, out of the box, works more like what you'd expect from a modern email client.
Okay, that's good. Someone on the PeerTube video that I posted the other day recommended, NMTUI? So thank you to that person.
Thank you to that person, but I disagree with that.
Okay.
This is one of my, I've got two, not really peeves, two irritations at the moment of things that people install that are unnecessary. One is Network Manager.
Okay.
Network Manager is just a lot of fucking GNOME gumph that if you've got systemd installed, I'm talking about if you've got a wired connection in particular. You don't need network anything. Just set it up in systemd. You can do networking with systemd, and if you've just got a wired connection, it's a two-line config file that you write.
Okay, yeah.
You tell it which interface and what's the gateway. And okay, if you DHCP'd, that's it. If you're not DHCP'd, if you want a static IP, you just tell it the static IP, and that just works. Network Manager is, it's so heavy. Like, it installs like 30 megabytes of stuff to do fucking nothing.
Yeah, also, but the, I mean, this is
particularly good either. I find it to be quite fragile.
I mean, I always just assumed that's network life, you know? But I like the, yeah, but I'm, I mean, I'm thinking specifically with wireless here, where it's, I've always found
on my laptop, I use IWCTL. IWCTL? Is that right? IWCU? It's the Intel made it for their own network chips initially as a way of, you know, connecting, but it works with anything. And it's not TUI, it's CLI, but it's very straightforward. It's so IWCTL, station, the name of the card, connect, the name of the network, and it will just connect.
What does TUI stand for? Terminal User Interface?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And then CLI is command line interface.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And when I say IWCTL, again, I the networking is done in systemd still. You can do a wireless connection in systemd. So if it's just one interface, you can just set that up in systemd. If it's a laptop and you go to coffee shops and you want to change networks, IWCTL to change the networks.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, no, I think
on the other one, it's fucking Grub. On a machine with systemd installed, what the fuck is Grub doing? Nothing.
The systemd handle that.
Yeah.
Was it the boot?
Systemd boot. It's so much easier to configure than Grub. Grub is horrible to configure, and it just works.
I just get nervous with Grub, to be honest. Like, it's just
Well, the fact that it's got a Do you do like Grub edit or something so that it checks it before, because it's so easy to fuck it up. It actually has to check it before it applies it.
Oh, okay. I think I edit a Grub config file and then do Grub update, I think is how it goes.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that there was an idiot proof checking machine. I should have looked into
it. That is the idiot proof. Okay, so here's my entire config file for systemd boot, okay?
Okay, you're going to pop it in the chat.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, there we go.
So it's the title, the kernel you want to load, the microcode, the intramfs, and then the drive. And I'm using, you know, you can use /dev/sda, whatever if you want, but I like using the whatever that's called, the UUID.
Okay,
and
then,
yeah, that's it. It's four lines that actually do anything here.
Nice.
And you do the same. You can have different entries. You can have a menu. You can have all that stuff. But it's just so much simpler than Grub.
Nice. Looks good. Well, I'm at the moment. Also, I tried Kitty because that was your recommendation.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'm still learning Kitty. Like it seems okay. It's still pretty light, right?
Yeah. It's not as light as I think. Xterm is particularly light. Xterm and ST is probably the lightest. But the Kitty and Alacrity are GPU accelerated.
Okay, so for what does
that makes any time where you'd have slow output, that will make that faster.
So it's not accelerating the graphics; it's accelerating.
No. Well, it's the drawing of the text essentially. It's when literally the drawing of the text is what's slowing a terminal down. They will accelerate that, which is something I do not give any fucks about.
Yeah, like I'm.
I don't care. What I want is one that opens quickly. And Kitty is not going to open as quickly as Xterm, but it's got more modern features. It'll render emoji. It'll handle Unicode emoji better and stuff like that.
Okay. I mean, I'm okay with UXterm at the moment.
Yeah.
Because it seems like any changes I make to Xterm, it also makes to UXterm. So
UXTerm, I think, is just like a shim that launches Xterm but applies some fixes to it so it can display Unicode, I think.
Yeah, that seems that's how I sort of
seem
to experience it. And honestly, like, I'm at that stage now where my modern T, which drops me into a terminal, because I don't like that was my old keyboard combination, so I switched it to that rather than what's modern Enter. Yeah, modern Enter does nothing. I don't know what I would put on that, but I got modern T, and that drops me into UXTerm, and that comes up as fast as I can sort of type into it. So.
Oh yeah, that's, no, XTerm. Yeah, XTerm will launch very fast. Yeah,
it took me a while to learn how the copy and pasting works on it. And I think at this point now, I might be ready to learn Vim.
I think we had a quick chat about, actually, before we get onto Vim, I will say when I try these newer, fancier terminals like Alacrity and Kitty, I never stick with it. I might always go back. It's ST for me, but I think ST and XTerm are kind of similar in a way.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of going back to the bare bones of it because then you're learning the system closer to its, you're closer to the system. Whereas with XFCE, for example, I always felt like I was learning XFCE, the way the tools work and way. And I'm a big XFCE guy. Like I would even recommend it for a lot of newbies, to be honest. I know that some people say, it's showing its age a little bit now. It doesn't have, things like docs and that kind of stuff. But if you want things like that, the fancier stuff, then I suppose KDE is pretty good. GNOME's probably not, it's fine as well. But if you want something that's like Windows 2000-y or customizable or fast, I've gone back to the Thunar File Manager. SXIV for image display. Do you use that one or?
Yeah, that's what I use. Yeah, I like SXIV. Is great.
Yeah, I like that you can set the settings in that into X resources. I think I was looking at some of the forum pages or something online, and they go, "Yeah, it's not worth like it's got so few settings. It's not worth having its own config file. So I just stick it in X resources."
Yeah,
That's good.
I would like that more if everything did that. You just have like the one config file for everything X related. Yeah, that'd be cool. The fact that some do and some don't. But yeah, no, I really like SXIV. I actually I maintain my own version of it.
Oh wow!
It's the most trivial thing. I wanted. Hang on, let me get a picture open so I can remind myself what it is that I wanted. Yeah, so I think it's the bar that you can have at the bottom that tells you the image name and other stuff.
Oh, I don't think I've got that.
I've got it off by default. B, I think, brings it up. I think that's default. But it was by default, it was the inverted colors of your background. So if your background was black, the bar would be white with black text. And I wanted the bar black with white text. So I've got my own patched version that I maintain for that one thing.
I've still got MPV for files. That works particularly well in i3.
MPV is beautiful. Yeah. MPV is a perfect video player. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's right there. Like, you've got the keyboard combinations. You've even got the thing that I love that it has the most. I can't even remember the actual keys specifically because I don't use it so much anymore. But it's you can adjust the audio and the video to sync it up. Because every now and then you might get a video file, you might have legally ripped a file from a DVD and it just hasn't settled in properly. So what is it? Is it like A and S or Z and X?
I can't remember. It's one of those that I do have to look up whenever I want to do it because, like you say, it's so infrequent, but it's so nice that you can just sort of tweak it by hitting the key rather than,
It used to be more frequent, but that's... It's nice that you can just do. You can also adjust the timing of the subtitles with a keyboard. The only thing that I would change about MPV is I would like it if the volume would be set at the last setting of the volume. So if you set it at like 50% and then you closed MPV and then you bring it up again, it would stay at 50%. It defaults.
It's all in the same file, doesn't it?
I don't think it does.
File. Let me just check that.
I think it just opens at the standard, like 100%.
Yeah, on the same file it does, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
a different
the case.
File, it'll default to 100, but...
Yeah. Okay, but I mean, you can default it to... I don't think that happens with me. I swear that doesn't happen with me. Anyway, what I do is I just edit the config file. Like, so for example, use case, if I'm watching video, standard normal video, 50% is fine. That settles in my system nicely.
Yeah.
I don't want anything. But if I'm listening to music, I want it at 100. So then if I'm going to listen to music for 20 minutes or something, I'll just pop in the config file. It's not too much. It's just like nano config mpv, mpv.conf or something like that. And then I'll just change it to 100 and then change it back. But
yeah, it's weird that it doesn't default to...
It might be because I clear my cache regularly or something like that.
Awesome. In fact, yeah, that's probably what it is, actually. Yeah, that would be it, I would think. Yeah.
But, I had to change my volume keys because I don't have the volume applet either, because I do that with shortcut keys. That's page up and page down. It used to be mod and up and down. Now it's mod and page up and page down.
What does that do, like the whole system volume?
It is the primary output volume.
Yeah, right. Okay,
which I think is master in a mixer or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's... I mean, I can have a look now. It's primary output, so I do, and then it goes up by 10% each time. Because who on earth wants it any more detailed than that? 5%, do you reckon, up and down?
There is a thing that can put you know on Max when you do the volume up, volume down thing, and you get like a bar in the middle of the screen that shows you the volume. There is a thing that can do that on Linux if you're interested in that.
I just have a notification send that just does.
Yeah, I don't really care about the visual feed. Like, if I'm pressing a button, I know it's doing the thing. I don't need visual feedback that it's doing the thing. But
I like the visual feedback that it's doing the thing, but I've got the just a little notification send.
Yeah.
I don't need anything.
Hang on, does it keep popping? If you're going from like 10 to 100, does it pop up every 10%?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I kind of like that.
But... So, yeah, there you go. I've done it. If you're watching this back, you'll see a demonstration.
I will watch it back, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks again for your Dunst configuration file. That helped me get the notifications. I've been meaning to do that when I was on i3, but not i3, ISWM. But now I've finally got around to doing it, and it looks lovely. Like it settles in with my system. It took me a while to work out what color scheme I wanted for i3 because it's very subtle. I've gone for a green, a slightly blue green aesthetic, mostly green. But so that's very basic. I've made the text a bit bigger than the default as well. I think it's like size 10 or 11, just because I'm getting on a bit and it's It's only up there for like a couple of seconds, so it doesn't need to. It doesn't. It can be a bit bigger because it's not interfering or anything. So,
I did do. I don't know if it's carried over to you. I make the icons fucking huge. When there's an icon, I make it.
Why so big?
Comically large. I just can't. I just like it.
No, I actually turned off the icons. I turned completely. Really? Why is there an icon? I don't understand why this is an icon at all.
Even on my time, actually, let me get a screenshot. My time pop up. Did I get that in time? Or did I get it just after? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay. I just got an arbitrary picture. but that's. Yep.
There we go.
I like the oversized pictures in the notifications. I don't know why.
That's very you. But I was surprised. I was expecting to see. Like your branded colours in the Dunst file.
For something I'm looking at, I've settled on eventually. But everything's virtually black. like just a shade above black, because I just want it to fade into the background, you know.
Yeah, a lot of mine is dark theme stuff. It's one, I think it's like 111111 for the background.
Yeah,
you know, not
I've
quite black.
Wallpaper now, though. I noticed on your, I was surprised on your what's the window manager called? We just IWM.
Yeah,
you just had the pure black background. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have it on my phone too. I don't have my phone with me at the moment, but I just have a pure black background.
I had that for a long time here, but the other day I went to a wallpaper. I'll show you my wallpaper.
Okay.
It's. I just thought I saw that painting. And
oh wow! What is the painting?
It's hang on. Gotta get the artist's name. It's a lady Renaissance artist.
Mm-hmm.
Called Elisabetta Cerami. So there were quite a few female painters during the Renaissance who were really fucking good, but didn't get the recognition of their male counterparts or whatever. And she's really fucking good. Like,
yeah.
She's better than a lot of very well-known men painters. But that painting in particular, that is Portia, the wife of Brutus. And she's trying to convince him that she, despite being a woman, is strong enough to take on some of his, like, worries and political shenanigans and, like, you know, to essentially be a partner with him in his political life. So to prove that she's strong enough for that, she's stabbing herself in the leg.
So this is Brutus of Et Tu Brutus fame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So this is Roman... like set in Roman times, right?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. It's a Renaissance painting of the Roman, classical. Yep.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. How much did the Renaissance know about the Romans?
A lot, yeah. I mean, they had all the books.
Oh, and they knew how to read them, right? It was just Latin, right?
Just Latin, yeah.
It's just Latin. God, see, that... Just thinking about it, that's kind of a human miracle that Latin stayed relatively consistent over all that time. I mean, I'm sure it probably didn't,
It didn't. Yeah, the Latin that's used in the church now is quite different from there's like ecclesiastical Latin, there was Vulgate Latin, and then there was various forms of Latin. I think within the
but it stayed presumably enough the same that they could translate it or update it or understand it.
Yeah, of course.
Because, like, no language is consistent. That's just, you know.
No.
Yeah, that's kind of miraculous, really, isn't it? That, like, because it's so easy with how many empires and wars and disasters that there was this one language that remained, you know, through Western civilization.
Funny that you're bringing this up, because did you watch the W video that I sent you?
Oh, no, I haven't, no.
It's literally about this.
Oh, wow.
Literally about what you're saying. And also I'm reading a book at the moment called I'll get the name, the name matters. How the World Made the West. And that's also kind of about this stuff. It's by Josephine Quinn. It's really fucking good. But one of the things she mentions in that is the fact that we now don't really know where our alphabet came from. I mean, day-to-day people, we're not really aware about where our alphabet came from. Like, we know it came from the Romans, and maybe prior to that from the Greeks, but we don't have a sense of... We don't really have a solid sense of that, but the Romans and the Greeks were very aware that they got their alphabet from the Phoenicians.
And
that was sort of strongly known at the time, which I think is kind of interesting, yeah.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, yeah, that is kind of interesting, yeah. I always wonder, like, how, because obviously, like, the vast majority of history is like written and chronicled and conducted, I guess, by the bourgeois plus, right?
Mm.
If I had a time machine, I genuinely feel like I'd like to go and just, like, how would Chris in the 1400s live? Because, like, we've done the school projects, and in Wales we've got this place called St. Fagans, which is a wonderful living museum. Everyone in Wales has been to it. If you're from Wales, shout out to St. Fagans. Tell Drew you've been to St. Fagans, because everyone's been there. I was on a school trip. I went there early this year with Rosie.
Where is it?
It's, like, near Cardiff, I think Vale of Glamorgan area.
Yeah.
So yeah, like sort of south in the middle. So it's relatively easy to get to. The parking's not too expensive, but it's free entry. So it's like you pay like £5 for parking or something, £6 for parking, and then you get free entry to this like living museum. And what they do is they've taken like old buildings, they've deconstructed them and then reconstructed them in St. Fagans. So there are buildings from all over Wales, but they've been reconstructed. And they had a House of Tomorrow, but then it became Tomorrow, and then it was like outdated, and it had like induction hubs. The House of Tomorrow was it's like, I don't know, like it was like 2020 is when it's supposed to have been. Okay. Right. And it's like, oh, they've got tablets on the walls, and and they've got under the bed storage chambers and things like that. And it's like, some of the stuff we consider so benign now, and some of the stuff, like induction hobs, I think they had induction hobs, solar panels. Some of it relatively came true. Like, it wasn't like, you know, robot maids and all this kind of stuff. Like, it was generally. But now I think it was a gift
was
shop.
When was the House of Future made?
I want to say the 90s.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know. I remember seeing it as like, an 8-year-old or 9-year-old. Thinking, but a lot of it was aesthetics. A lot of it was just minimalism. They had open plan.
That's really just identifying trends and extrapolating them. At some point, there'll be a reaction against that. We're like, in 20 years, we'll all be like hyper fussy, like Victorian interiors and stuff, like just clutter fucking everywhere.
Yeah, but also one of the things I had is like, with like double and triple glazing, people will just enjoy the light, so they'll just make their whole house out of glass. So like the roof was just like big panes of like double or triple glazing.
I do love the idea. I saw it on one of those many decades ago. You know, the Channel 4, like, let's do a fancy house, let's build a fancy house bourgeois TV shows. There's one where they did this woman's bedroom with a glass roof. And I love the idea of just looking up at like the stars and like the rain and like, you know, like the rainstorm, just looking up at it like from your bed. Amazing.
Yeah. I do notice like when there aren't, like, it'd be quite amusing if you were on a flight path and you had that, like.
Drones now. People would be hovering over with drones spying on you.
Oh God, yeah. Anyway, yeah, St. Fagans. Anyway, I was saying something about St. Fagans, wasn't I?
About like Welsh, like identity.
Oh, Welsh history.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah, like I just feel like, even though we've done all of the history stuff at school, and St. Fagans is quite a good, I think, quite a good representation of like how, of day to day Welsh living in the past. You know, all of the eras. You know, they've got like old farm. This is like a typical old farmhouse from, you know, 800 AD or whatever, you know, and they've got all this kind of stuff. They even did a Celtic village, and that was awesome. But because they made it out of wood, it didn't like last, you know, that long. I don't know. Maybe they took it down. Maybe it was a temporary piece or something like that. But that was amazing. And like, I think that's the closest thing to a bit of insight that you can have to like, normal people. Oh, they also have in St. Fagans like this row of like terraced houses, you know, like the old miners' houses type of things, and each house is like decorated a different period. So it's like, I think it starts at like 1840s and then it goes through to like the early 90s.
Like that's fun. Fun to see, like, literally walking through it.
Yeah, like you start off, the first house is like, there would be the house Bible, and that'd be like the only book in the house.
That's the entertainment.
Yeah, that's the entertainment. And then you go to like the like 1900. It's like, oh, people have a shelf of books. You know, that's the. And then you got like the 1930s or something? And then there's like every house has a painting of like King George or something there. And then, and a radio. They had the radio come in, but like it was like a big thing that took up like, you know, the size of a TV. And then it went all the way to Betamax. And also they had the gardens, the associated gardens. So like during the war, they would have like allotments and stuff. You know, and then the garden shed, that was like, oh, having a shed in your garden, that's fancy.
That generation as well, that generation during the war where it was, you know, dig for England, you know, grow your own veg and stuff. I love how that carried on after the war. Like everybody, the greatest generation age, like both of my granddads, because this was my grandparents' house when we moved in, and the entire garden was just vegetables.
Yeah.
There was a tiny patch of lawn, and the whole rest of it was just dedicated to, you know, like runner beans, tomatoes, potatoes, onions, cabbages, just like, yeah, just grew all their own veg. It was fucking cool.
Yeah, I feel like that generation did have moxie, like...
Yeah.
Because it's like, I remember with lockdown and people freaked out about having to stay inside to like stop the spread of a thing, going, oh, I'm going crazy. And it's like, I got a bit of sympathy for you, but like, come on, like not 100 years ago, people were doing way more tough stuff to let get by. Come on.
I absolutely agree with you. But then up to the point of like single mum with five kids.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And like that must have been a fucking nightmare during lockdown. But for like, people like us and you know, well-off people. Yeah. Absolutely. Like,
yeah. No. Yeah.
Holiday church.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Absolutely.
Fucking loved it.
Yeah. No, I was fine with it. It was great.
My sister said, can we have another lockdown?
Yeah,
she was on furlough, she was getting paid, and she just like, just chilling out, watching TV, you know.
Yeah,
still having to, you know, get up days now, just her and my niece, like,
It was, yeah, no, it was the best. I mean, it might have been like the best time of my adult life. It was like, just like we got through like Morrowind during that time.
Everybody got to live like me for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do sometimes fantasize about the, like, okay, I'd like to be. I don't want to like say it, but it's like, I would. But like, I would be a great benefit scrounger. I'm just saying, like, I'm pretty good at paperwork, and I'm pretty good at wangling the system. And I reckon if I wanted to, and I could do the interviews as well. Because you struggle with the interviews, don't you?
Yeah.
I could be the one that Keir Starmer fears. It's like, but I do. Yeah, I mean, because I'm not at a bakery no more. For the update. It was just shift work kind of makes life for me and Rosie hard. You know, she's got the 9 to 5 weekends free, and I was working a lot of weekends, which meant that the only time we had together was evenings. And I would work relatively late in the evenings as well. So,
And also it's tiring, isn't it? Like that
kind yeah. Of oh, yeah. Is
draining.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to the. It sounds like my mum was as well. It sounds like you're very much interested in like the social history, like
yes.
How the normal people lived and stuff. And like, I read and watch quite a lot of history, and that's the part I'm least interested in. I don't give a fuck how the normal people lived. I want like the big trends and the big plays and the big, you know, the big interweaving changes and stuff. Like one of the things in this book that's interesting, going back further to what your point before that. Is like, for example, the Greeks didn't know they were the Greeks.
Oh, I suppose not, right?
Like they did not think of themselves as the Greeks. They did not, for the most part, there's exceptions to this, but for the most part, they didn't think of themselves as a you know, a homogenous grouping. You know, it was Athens, it was Sparta, it was Thebes. They were all city-states that had like they had a common language, but and religion and some cultural practices. But they certainly didn't think of themselves as like making up any kind of whole. It's only looking back, and same with Phoenicians. Like the Phoenicians, it seems like didn't even think of themselves as a cohesive culture. It was only other people referred to them as the Phoenicians. It's really late on until we get that concept. I mean, it's modern states that lead to that conception of ourselves as, you know, sharing something broader than just a language.
Yeah. And actually, I reckon like it could even go further. Well, I feel like it might even go further than that, because historically, like in a lot of ways, we are one people now, the world, right? When we talk about things...
I mean, the point of the book, honestly, is we always have been.
Yeah.
And it's the history and science of the Victorian era really, that fucked us up when they essentially invented the idea of discrete civilizations and also of races. That's what fucked us up. Like, in the classical world, they didn't have a conception of race, in the sense that we have it now, as being tied to biology. They had a sense of other people who look different, but they attached no weight to that. And they had a sense of other people who have a different language and different religions, which they did attach weight to. But another one of the things she mentions is there was, I can't remember the point, in at some point during the Roman Republic, one third of the senators in Rome were African.
Wow.
Because that was just part of the empire. So there were African Romans, you know, it's not, but they weren't racialized. So kind of nobody ever mentioned it. They were just from Africa.
That's amazing.
In the way, there's so many ways we look at the world that we think are natural, but are actually very much constructed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Wow. That is, wow. This is an educational podcast.
The other fact that she dropped in actually that blew my mind is that everybody living today is a descendant of everybody living in 200 BC. We are each related to every single person living in 200 BC.
So 200 BC is 2,200 years ago, ish.
Yeah.
That's not that long ago. That's what, like, how many generation, like, how many life spans is that?
Like, well, if say like 70 years. What's that? Let's go 2,000 divided by 70. 28.
Shit. I would say maybe, it feels like more, but like...
Yeah, I thought it'd be more than that, yeah.
Wow. It probably is more, like 70, I mean, it could be twice that, and it's still, like, quite surprising.
Yeah.
But then again...
The point of her saying that is that cultures, as we call them, have always intermingled.
Yeah.
It's only recently that we thought of nations as being static and fixed to a particular place. Like people moved, intermingled, shared cultures, innovated on each other's cultures, and it was very porous.
That's So I guess
the name of it again. But go on, say it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't the idea of like the strengthening of religions and stuff like that in the 20th century, like, linked to elections. Like, thank you, Rosie. I got a cup of tea.
Ooh, I need a cup of tea.
I think it was, I'm only half remembering this now. But there was but elections were the driving force behind a lot of, like, religious divisions, particularly in America, because ethnic gerrymandering or something like that.
That makes sense. I do but know. People... I've heard anecdotally that, like, for example, Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
I said Abraham Lincoln. Virtually didn't say a word about God or religion or anything until he became president, and then. A lot of God-based reasoning and like, I think we talked about this before, but it's almost maybe it's almost a requirement to be religious to be U.S. president. I think Trump kind of throws that into question a little bit, but even he had to sort of play the game.
Trump and religion is a complicated one, right? Because the man is obviously not religious. Like, we can all see it, right? He's got three wives. His religious based views have changed drastically since the 90s. Like, he's almost certainly pressured women into abortions he's incredibly, prideful and, gluttonous and, you know, all of the stuff that the, you know, like, he's not a religious guy. He doesn't, like, he's not even close. And I mean, yet...
He's almost, in a kind of Marquis de Sade kind of way, he's almost like the perfect liberal subject. He's like, he's pure id.
Yeah.
He's just like, he's just needs and fulfilling those needs.
Yeah. And yet, the vast majority of evangelical Christians will vote for him. And it's like, and the only way I can rationalize it, and I think I might be over-rationalizing it, is that everyone knows this. Everyone sees the same thing that I see, but they know that Trump will do the things they want, so they just ignore him.
Honestly, I don't really sort of look down too much on that, because I think I would do that in reverse.
I don't necessarily care about the personal ethical qualms of my leaders if they're doing a good job. If they're doing the job that they're hired for, and, you know, obviously there's a limit to that, but, like, I don't need my leaders to be a good person. I need them to be a good leader, right? Like, if, for example, going back to lockdown, when our Prime Minister Boris Johnson was seen having sneaky parties, like, I get how that's frustrating and irritating and particularly horrible, particularly if you are single mum with five kids. And but, like, if he was handling the whole situation really well, fine, he's done a bad thing. He should apologise, but
I guess to sort of come up with something that would appeal to me that's equivalent to Trump, it would be somebody who doesn't give a shit about politics, but has recognised that they could have electoral success by claiming to be a socialist. And promising to, you know, nationalise water, nationalise electric, you know, all that stuff. Mm. And then got elected and did those things. I'm fine. I'll vote for them.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know. Yeah, well, that's the thing. And you've got to kind of, like, judge the future, right? You know, I want someone to do, like, say we get like a technocrat, like person that comes up through as an independent or like a Lib Dem or something, you know, someone like, and they're like, yeah, like you say, they're personally, they're non-political. Maybe they're quite, you know, bourgeois, or like they you know,
career, you know, pure careerist, you know, a Clinton essentially.
Yeah, and they put together this manifesto that's really good. You know, nationalize water, nationalize internet. You know, bring the post office back into public ownership. Bring all the stuff back into public ownership as well. Maybe even decommodify the food.
That'd be good.
Because the fact that food is for profit is insane to me, if you think about it. Because, like, why is it commodified? Well,
I mean, we accept the fact that housing is commodified, right? How we all know that housing is essential to living, really.
Yes.
Not that you'll die without a house, but it's certainly, you know, it's in that direction. But we accept houses being a speculative commodity.
Yeah.
And how homeowners celebrate it when the prices go up, when they're speculative asset that they live in, when the price of the home goes up. But imagine that applied to food.
Mm.
Imagine if we just encouraged people to stockpile food so that other people didn't have food. And then the people that did have food more than they needed celebrated it when food went, the price of what food went up, and put it even further beyond the reach of the poor.
Yeah, but also those people are forgetting the one thing, the one big thing, is that when you buy a house, the value of that house is one house, right? So if you wanted to move into a bigger house and use your current house as leverage, it's still one house. Yeah.
On paper, you're worth more. Yeah.
No, yeah. No. Yeah. It's I mean, obviously, if you know, the decommodification of housing is... It's just important, right? Like, if you know, like everyone should be able to. I don't care how lazy or evil you are. You have a roof over your head, like, it's fine. Like, everyone should have a roof over their head.
Not to be accused of being funded by the CCP, but, you know, in China, home ownership I think is 85%, and it goes up to 90 something in rural communities.
That's amazing.
It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even that fussy on the nature of it. Like, yeah, maybe all housing could be social housing. In that case, people could be like, oh, well, if your family gets bigger, you could just apply for a for an upscale or whatever, or maybe it just makes home ownership for everyone really easy. I don't care, as long as everyone is covered.
That's all they do in China, is every time there's a house price spike, and every time it looks like there's going to be a house price spike, you know, all the Western media is, oh, the Chinese housing market is going to crash, you know, they've got a bubble. And all they do every time is pull some levers and lower the price of housing.
Yeah.
They just sort it out. They fix it. They keep house pricing low. So 85% of people own their own homes in China.
Yeah. Do you know what big lefty thing I would put in if I was Dictator Chris, right? Mm. I would ban all coercive pricing, right? So that's like, so you know, on the internet, for example, where, like, say, take Amazon Prime, right? Let's say Amazon Prime is £8 a month. But you get, if you buy a year, you get 2 months free. I'd ban that. Mm-hmm. Ban that. If something costs...
It's another thing that's making things more expensive for the poor who can't afford to pay for a year in one go.
No, yeah. A thing is worth a thing. You set the price. You don't get to set the price on conditionally. It's just like... Just...
I very much agree with that, yeah.
And that includes, like, multi-packs, buy one, get one freeze, the whole thing... Meal deals. Sorry, I'm a good meal deal hound myself, but, like, you know, a thing costs what it costs. That's it. You set the price.
I've probably mentioned it before, but when I was working in a Shell petrol station, I used to make up deals because the deals always struck me as that, like, they do a week long thing where if you buy a sandwich and a bottle of whatever, you also get, like, this thing, like a chocolate bar or something. It's always, like, weirdly arbitrary. So I started making up, like, somebody had come to the counter with, like, a magazine. And I don't know, like a chocolate bar, and I'd say, you know, if you get two chocolate bars and a magazine, you're entitled to a free 2 liters of motor oil. I just make it up on the spot, and they go like, really? They're like, motor oil is like 15 quid. I'll be like, yeah. If you get that, I'll just give it to them.
That's amazing. How was it like working there, by the way?
Well, that's how I entertain myself. Is by it was quite boring. It was good when it was. A reasonable amount of busy, so you always had something to do. Too busy was horrible. Really quiet was nice, because they just take a magazine or take a book in and just literally just read. But yeah, a little bit busy or really busy was horrible.
Yeah, same like that in the bakery.
Want either no customers or a steady, you know, a reasonable steady supply of customers.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of fun. Like, you could have a chat with them. You could, you know, like I was quite surprised that I I've had a lot of jobs where I've talked to people, but the bakery was like the first job where I would you know, serve them as in a retail sense. I really enjoyed that part of it.
Me too. Yeah, just talking to people.
Yeah, and that kind of gives me a lot of personal confidence in a way, because it's like, you know, as I'm like working out what I want to do now. At least I know that, like, yeah, customer service is something I can do. I feel like I'm good at it. And, you know, I wouldn't want to do sales because I can't work on commission because money doesn't motivate me that way. Yeah. I just, like, you know, if commission's for a type, certain type of person, and I just wouldn't.
I think you could do something actually really quite upscale. Because you're posh coded.
You know what I mean?
Like posh people would not know that you're not posh. They wouldn't be able to spot it.
I don't know. Yeah, kind of. When I was at primary, I went to a posh primary school, which is probably where it comes from. Yeah. Because my mum was a nurse and my dad like fixed computers and
so we were
solidly working class, like in terms of our like steady money. Like, we weren't ever like at risk of losing our homes, but we were like, you know.
Yeah.
And but like, I got a lot of flack. I got a lot of bullying for going to that posh school. And oh man, it's definitely given me some like complexes and stuff like that. But my mum would not, like, I did really well in my SATs exams when you key stage 2 when you're at like 10, 11. And I did really well, and I was likely to get like a really good scholarship to go to like the local really posh school. But my parents like absolutely forbid it, because my mum got a scholarship and she got bullied really badly for not being posh there. And my dad just wanted me to meet girls, to be honest, because it was an old boys' school.
Looking back, you're glad that you didn't go to the school?
Absolutely glad. Yeah, like I, yeah. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say, but like, I certainly respect my parents' logic. Like, they yeah. thought that being in an all boys school was not socially beneficial to me.
Oh, all boys as well.
Yeah, it was an all boys school. Yeah, and and I think I probably wouldn't have fit in. But like, me and Jenny, you know, Jenny, we both have that same kind of. We both yeah. fit in this odd bracket of not a posh person in a posh place.
Yeah.
And it's like, so.
I can pass.
Kind of. There are still signs that they pick up on. Like, I don't know what a shell.
You're blue ink like a hooligan.
Blue ink like a hooligan. Yeah. And I was just writing green ink. So everyone, like, it's just. I guess, you know, I don't know. There are some things, yes. I think, I don't know. It could be the case that, like, to a non-posh person, I seem posh, and to a posh person, I don't seem posh. I seem common. That's the one, yeah. And that could be the worst of all outcomes, really. But, to be fair, I'm still working out what where to go in the workplace, but I feel quietly confident that I'll find something that fits. The only sort of issue is that we are living somewhere relatively rural now, so to get to the nearest town is, it's like a 40-minute commute, really, or like it's a commute that you have to give 40 minutes for.
Is that public transport or would that be driving?
No, that's just driving.
That's right. Okay. So,
but it's rural driving. So a couple of towns are like 20 minutes away, but there's any number of things that can slow you down by 20 minutes. It could be sheep on the road. There could be like impromptu like mudslides or roadworks or whatever, and you have to then sort of, you know, if I'm at a job where I'm allowed to be a little bit late because of these things, then it makes things a bit easier. But there's a lot of work from home jobs that are about these days. So that might be an option. I did get an interview with one of the town councils for an events management role. Unfortunately, the interview falls on the same day as my vasectomy. So, I'm getting a vasectomy, by the way. Sorry, I dropped that in, but like.
That's a big revelation.
Yeah, it's not really. I was never going to have kids.
Save on condoms.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, I always meant to do it, and it's one of those things that you can always put off because, you know, we got a contraceptive plan as it is, but we wouldn't need one if I was snipped, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're doing it private because it's so much quicker and easier. It's not that expensive. £900, so you know, and that's coming out of the household budget, thanks Rosie. So and now just seems like a, you know, the nice, like I don't know, like, since I don't have a job at the moment, now seems like, but apparently you don't need that much recovery time, apparently, like only a couple of days. Really straightforward operation. Really surprised more guys don't do it, but like, half the blokes I know have had it done, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just something that, I don't know. It's relatively novel to me because I'm going through the process now, but I think it's kind of redundant after a while, right? Like, it's just
I assume, unlike pretty much every other form of contraception, I assume it's 100% effective. Like, there's not...
Sort of. It can heal itself early on in the process.
Oh, okay.
So about 16 weeks in, you get tested.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty certain that because they snip.
It's 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not a snip. It's a cauterizing. They stick like a little lightsaber in and just go. Zzz, zzz, zzz. apparently, the operation takes 10 minutes.
I mean, it is. I don't want to sound cocky, but I think I could do it. You know what I mean? I'm not saying you wouldn't get an infection or something, but like, I think I could poke around in there and see what's what, and you know,
The guy I'm going to has been he's had his practice for 20 years, and he's got a very high success rate, great reviews on TripAdvisor or whatever it is.
Snip Advisor.
I mean, I don't think there's really ever been a case where I've wanted kids, to be honest. So,
yeah.
I mean, that was the reason me and Rebecca broke up back in the day. She wanted another kid, and I was like, yeah,
not now, obviously, not that it's on the table, but I would have loved to have had kids. I love kids.
Kids are great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against kids. Like, I love my little niece Ada. She's brilliant.
Yeah. You just don't want them yourself.
I don't want them myself. No, like, you know.
If I had them, I want the baby to be born and just keep it away from me until it can talk. I'm not interested until it can talk. They're not interesting while they can't talk.
That's really bad fathering.
So that's quite Edwardian.
But also, like, the first 3 months seemed like hell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm all in favor of...
Fragile as well. Yeah. Like, I'm clumsy.
I mean, I don't know how fragile they are, but I wouldn't want to test it, to be honest.
My dad, actually, my youngest sister, 6 years younger than me, when she was, I think she literally, like, that week just started to walk. So whatever age that is. And it was snowy, and he was carrying her, and he took her down to feed the rabbits at the bottom of the garden. And he was just carrying, and he slipped over and landed on her and broke her leg. So, yeah, literally, yeah. he felt horrible.
Wow.
And so obviously went to the hospital out of it. And when something like that kind of injury happens, they send child services around to assess and check whether it was, you know, an abusive situation, right? Which obviously it wasn't, but yeah, he felt horrible. And literally when she just started walking, then plaster on her leg and, yeah, back to... She got around, I don't know how long the plaster was on, but while this cast was on her leg, I remember, she got around by shuffling.
Oh, wow. I mean, at that age, right, the bones are all still growing, right? So it wouldn't cause a lasting issue.
Yeah, totally fine. But yeah, a clean break and blah, blah, blah. But just horrible. But yeah, just the thought of just dropping the child, especially a baby. You drop it, it lands wrong, it's fucking dead.
I don't know. Like, nature might have a way, right?
Little parachutes that we don't know about.
Or maybe they're just, like, you hear about these stories about babies falling out of windows and surviving.
Your friends or relatives or whatever just had a baby and they're like, do you want to hold it? And you're like, yeah, sure. And they're like, be very careful, support the head, hold it in this very specific way. Do not let the head, you know. It's like, this thing's getting a fucking break.
Yeah, but I mean, that's parents being parents, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't want to like, sound too much like it.
I mean, we're born too early because our brains are too big.
Yeah.
Like, literally, the neck cannot support the head when you're born. You know, you do have to... Yeah.
We are really badly evolved, like, in so many ways.
Have you ever seen... This is grim, but have you ever seen... the Battlestar Galactica, the newer
no
one. Okay, so it started with a 3-part miniseries, and then I think it's in the first episode. One of she's secretly a robot lady, but she looks like a lady, and she's just looking at this person's baby in the park, and she's fascinated with it. And she's
I think I've seen like the first episode of it.
Okay, yeah, and she's just sort of you see her reaching into the pram and just going, that's weird, and then you just hear a snap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she walks away, and then the mother comes back and starts crying, and yeah, just like accidentally snapped the neck. That's what I feel like I would do with a fucking baby.
They're quite, like, I mean, they flop. They're floppy, and I think that stops them from, like, breaking too much, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's, like, the older people that break more easily.
That's true. That is true, yeah. Yeah, with the brittle bones.
Yeah. I'm a bit.
Also, yeah, not interesting until they can talk. Children are not interesting until they can talk.
No, but they're great when they are like little baby. Well, I shouldn't call her little baby Ada. She's five. But she's just like, she's such a chatty one. Like, she's just like, she's like at the dinner table going, and then I did this, and then I did that.
Hearing the way they're putting the world together, hearing the, you know, the sort of explanations for things they come up with and stuff is just beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I love the fact, like, my sister sends me little videos of when she goes on, like, Go Ape and stuff like that. She loves, roller coastery stuff, like zip lines and all that stuff. She's got, like, friends about her the same age as her, and they're always a bit nervous. And she's like, eh. Yeah, I think her dad is quite keen to get her, you know, get her to be quite adventurous and quite you know.
Yeah.
But she's she's spoiled. Well, I don't want to say spoiled rotten, but like they travel a fair bit.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
They're always off somewhere interesting, so I'm assuming. But she's quite good at, it's kind of interesting what, like, my sister was saying when she was, like, playing with, like, French kids and stuff like that. Like, they don't understand each other, so they kind of do. But, it's a really interesting age because it's, like, they're used to some language but not all language. So they play and they kind of communicate, but only, but in ways that, like, children do, like, it's...
I know what you mean. That's cool. Yeah, they're probably... Because, when so much of what you do is play, it's probably easier because you can demonstrate and, you know,
And they're just, like, exploring and understanding the world. It's lovely, One thing that we should probably talk about before it gets too far on in the podcast is the Online Safety Act.
The credit card companies are doing as well, I think.
Yes. So I can't help but think, like, all of this, like, international censorship is coming along all at the same time. Mm. Like, that's pretty sinister, right? Like,
There's a direction to it, for sure. I mean, this is going to be news to everybody listening, but it's not actually about protecting the kids.
No, it's not. It's weird because it's like, if it was protecting the kids, why not just make it so that internet service providers have to have a child, child safety filter on the internet connection?
They all do.
Yeah.
I mean, literally everything does. People don't use them, but I've encountered it twice. Right.
Mm-hmm.
First time was Pornhub.
Mm-hmm.
So I just VPN'd. Second time was a video on TikTok about people standing up to an ICE raid.
Oh yeah.
People. An ICE raid came in and people came. You know, sort of forced them out, basically. And that was age. That was age required, and that's what it's for. It's that, and it's for deciding who's got speech and who hasn't. And if they decide that people with, you know, various gender expressions or sexualities, or I mean, political speech, very much. So I think
or people that think Palestinians are human beings.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're radical. That's what the fuck it's for. Yeah.
Yeah, I am quite surprised, and maybe this is my naivety showing, that it happened this quickly. Right, back when they were doing things like the Patriot Act and the Bush era shit, right, things were like a lot more subtle. There was proper pretense there. They lied. They had the courtesy to lie to us. Week one, they were getting rid of all of the you know, a lot of the Palestinian sort of activism stuff. Mm. Like, that was just like day one. Oh, if you're under 18. Yeah. You can't see that because it's harmful to children. I mean,
it's not even worse. It's so absurd. It's so starkly evil that you can't even. Yeah.
And also, someone pointed out on Mastodon or Fedi the other day, we are looking at reducing the voting age to 16 in the UK.
Mm.
There's good 16 to 18 year olds. they're going to be limited in the information that they can vote on. Like, we need to have some sort of, like, constitutional level law that says that political speech should be accessible to at least 16 and above, like, as a blanket, like, if you're going to vote...
This came up in a conversation the other day in the Freebooters Discord, which people should join, where I think I was telling Shah that, like, we do not have any laws guaranteeing the freedom of the press here.
No.
In fact, we've got the... I can't remember what it's called. My brain always goes DMOB. It's something that sounds like that. But there's some order that the government can issue that just set that where they deliver it to a newspaper and say, essentially, you can't run this story.
Oh, like a super injunction?
Yeah, like a super injunction, but it's got a specific name, I think, or a specific acronym or something. Yeah, which obviously in America they can't. They can put other kinds of pressure on, but legally in America, you know, the freedom of the press is guaranteed. Mm. We don't have anything like that here, not even remotely like that. There's no guarantee of freedom for the press.
No, or freedom of speech in general. No, like, no. You know, there was that particularly contentious issue where the guy got pretty severely punished for getting the dog to do a Nazi salute. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Yep.
Yeah, and then Tommy Robinson had to get himself fucking involved in it, didn't he?
Did he? I thought it was before Tommy Robinson.
No, Tommy Robinson. That was one of the things that probably, you know, pushed him up. He's just like he's like a football hooligan, but for politics, right? Like that's...
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like, yeah.
The MasterCard thing as well. So, somebody doesn't know if you're a non-gamer or whatever, but MasterCard has essentially said that their payment mechanisms can't be used on stores that sell certain things like games that involve incest and stuff.
Mm.
So, Valve have pulled, or they are pulling, an enormous number of games from Steam so that they can still carry on using MasterCard. I saw via Fedi the other day that Zoom have basically just said no. The Zoom platform, which is another place where you can buy games. I've not really heard of it, apart from
Zoom.
The logo at the beginning of Flat Out 2. Yeah. You know, Flat Out 2, that thing comes up, Zoom platform? Apparently, it's a game shop online, and they have a little tool for running games on Linux and downloading games on Linux that uses Proton and stuff. They seem quite Linux-focused. So they actually
For a minute there, I thought you meant Zoom as in, like, the...
No, not the meeting app.
Zoom. Do you know what their website is?
They've straight up said, we're not, like, unless it becomes literally untenable, like, we're not going to delete anything. We're not censoring anything, essentially. But, yeah, no, the idea of banks, which is who MasterCard is ultimately in the control of, banks deciding what is valid culture and what isn't, just in and of itself is evil. But the reason they're doing it, amongst the capitalist class, there's been a sharp move towards social conservatism. And I think they want to put the levers in place. So, like I said, I mean, certainly they want to control political speech. But I think the stuff, you know, to control, like, gender expression, sexual identity, anything like that, they can just decide what is and isn't allowed, which is obviously a fucking awful idea.
It's... I can't believe anyone would think this is a good idea. Like,
I was talking to Ghosty. I was saying Steam is 85%, last time I looked, 85% of PC game sales, and they take a 30% cut. So they're fucking raking it in. And I think that they're one institution who I think would have the power to stand up to MasterCard and say, okay, if you want to lose your cut of our sales, fine, we'll use Visa, PayPal, Stripe, you know, all of the other ones.
Weren't Stripe involved in the Itch one?
I don't know, honestly.
MasterCard go through Stripe?
Oh, does it? In that case, bad example. But
I think it's literally American Express, MasterCard, and Visa are the three ways you can pay by card.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is, and American Express is very. Like, when I was working at the bakery, we had a few American Expresses, but not many. Mm. So
yeah,
it really,
American Express is over here, yeah.
You know, it's two companies that can easily collaborate.
I had a quick Google of figures and just of
online sales in general, MasterCard is about 26-25%. So it's a quarter of all payments. But yeah, no, but I think Valve has the power to say, if you don't want to cut of our sales, then it's slightly inconvenient for our customers, but there's other things they can pay with.
For a long time, Valve allowed you to buy things with crypto, Bitcoin in particular, on their platform. Yeah, for ages, it was just always there, and no one ever used it. And the thing is,
Bitcoin. It does solve that specific problem, but it brings in a whole bunch of other problems. I don't like Bitcoin. I don't think we should be settling on Bitcoin.
I'm probably a little bit more favorable towards Bitcoin than you, but I recognize all of those problems, like the environmental problems. Yeah. There is a wealth disparity option. Like, there is the people that own the most Bitcoin. It has a higher wealth inequality than fiat currency. Like, it has a astronomical wealth inequality.
My principal problem with it is it's yet another speculative asset, and that's what it's used for. That's its fundamental purpose, is to make money for the people who own the most of it. It's just more asset speculation, which we don't need. Having a currency that has a fixed value, that is a purely trading currency, Keynes always wanted this for international trade. But having, when we are doing it, when we buy games from Steam, we're kind of doing international trade. But yeah, having a currency that's specifically for trade with a fixed pin to the value of other currencies, great idea, but not Bitcoin.
They do exist. I think they're called stable coins, right?
Is that another crypto, though? Or is that
No. Stable coin is not a coin. It's a genre of coins. Mm. Like meme coin is another one, which is super speculative, like what the Trump coin is. Mm. Well, actually, I think, and I could be wrong on this, so don't, is that, there's a Trump coin and a Melania coin.
Right.
I think Trump coin is a meme coin. So basically a meme coin is a coin where you just buy it for fun. Like it's a way to donate to Trump off the books, basically. Mm. But what happens is that, Trump develops the currency, or the Trump team develops the currency. They have all of the currency, and then they sell it to friends, family, associates. Yeah. Then they launch the currency, and then day one, they sell all of their currency. Yeah. Yeah. And then the value skyrockets up until like an hour after its launch. Yeah. And then it drops. Oh, yeah. So you basically have to...
As a capitalist, it's genius, because you're IPOing nothing.
Mm.
IPOing something that is completely abstract. Yeah,
but you're selling hype. Yeah.
I don't want any kind of actual coin. It should just be this international trading thing. Should just be an accounting fiction, essentially.
What about Monero? Ghosty might know. I think Ghosty talks about Monero sometimes. So fill us in on that. But
I don't want any private currency, and I don't want any currency with an intrinsic kind of value.
Sorry, what do you mean by private currency? Like you want a state regulated one or something?
Internationally agreed amongst governments. This is a deep topic, but there are capitalists who want to get us off fiat currency, essentially.
Yes.
they want currency to be entirely digital. There are many reasons they want to do that, but one of the reasons they want to do that is because when they can pay people in money that disappears, there's papers on this and stuff. There's economically right wing think tank reports on if we can make all currency digital, we can pay people in money that disappears at the end of the month, which is awful, and it also means that the state can't do, states aren't doing anything now anyway, but it would completely, once and for all, remove the state's ability to build things.
How would the money be removed at the end of the month? Is that, would that be a feature of, yes.
That would be a feature of the currency, yeah.
Oh, so this is a theoretical currency. It's not like Bitcoin is now. Oh, right.
If we can get rid of government-backed fiat currency, then they can do the, basically, because banks issue currency, but it's tied to fiat currency. But so when in that imagined future, when banks issue that is the currency. It's not backed by anything, so the banks can do what they want with it.
Mm.
They can say it disappears at the end of the month, currency the last 3 hours, or it devalues, or anything like that.
Mm.
But the big thing is it would the whole point of having a central bank with a currency backed by taxpayers is that governments can use that to raise money to build things.
Mm.
And getting rid of that, getting rid of a central bank with a fiat currency would mean that only private capital can build things. So everything that we've seen, all the rot in the NHS, all the private building, that would be the only way for government to do things. So it's like ultra privatization.
Yeah. But the trouble is that so theoretically, right, the ideal would be to have a digital currency similar to something like Monero, but pinned to the Bank of England, right? Run by the Bank of England.
It doesn't need to be a specific thing. All it needs to be is an accounting thing. You just give it a name and say it has this value. You don't need it to be anything in particular.
That's crypto is, isn't it?
But that's separate for the anonymous payments. I think for anonymous payments, I think there should just be you should have essentially prepaid credit cards. Anonymous, something that works like a credit card that's just you put cash on it. You know, you buy it, you put cash on it, and then you go and spend it, and nobody knows who's using it. That should exist. Protected in law because with cash, it's protected in law that you can't prevent somebody with cash buying something that's legal for them to buy, right?
Mm.
But a payment processor like MasterCard can do that. They can prevent. Yeah. They can say no, you can't buy this thing that's perfectly legal for you to buy. That should just be illegal. You shouldn't be able to prevent through a payment mechanism that's just backed by real currency. You shouldn't be able to say somebody can't buy something that's legal for them to buy. That should be illegal.
Doesn't this all basically boil down to the fact that the government should just have decent privacy laws regarding cards, money, digital spending?
Yeah. And a way of paying things anonymously that is enshrined, yeah.
Why can't the government just set up a payment processor that's just,
A lot of countries have a national bank, national investment bank, which is a slightly separate thing, relating in a separate way. But yeah, that's another thing that the government should be doing, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so back onto the was it OSA? Was it the Online Safety Act?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that's interesting to me about it is how unpopular it is. Right, there are people I know who, like, I use VPNs for a whole bunch of reasons that have nothing to do with, like, over 18 stuff or what, you know, anything that the government's trying to legislate against here, right?
Mm.
I am personally worried now that I'm not going to be able to use my VPN because of the kickback to the Online Safety Act that they're going to try and start cracking down on them.
Yeah, so the next obvious step is make VPNs illegal, right?
Mm.
I mean, first of all, this is another thing that came up in chat the other day. First of all, do you remember like 10, 15 years ago, there were all these stories in the mainstream press about China's Great Firewall and how repressive their country is because you can't get out, you know, blah, 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 blah. And now they're enacting the worst version of what they were describing, you know, China's horrible authoritarian state. Now we're enacting that here.
Yeah.
Just the irony of that, for starters.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I mean, if they go with the thing is, then they're like, there's some quite big VPN companies that make a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a different proposition. Like basically making a group of successful businesses illegal, they're going to face pressure with that one, I think. Possibly it's the way they'll go. But yeah, I mean, if they make VPNs illegal, then everybody will just start using Tor.
Yeah.
And then I imagine they'll just make Tor illegal, right? Because you can very easily spot Tor traffic on a network.
Are there not countries where they've tried to crack down on Tor and Tor has had campaigns to try and circumvent that? Like, for example, some countries block torproject.org, but there's like a way to get Tor through email or something like that. Like you can email an address and it'll give you a link
That's happened. That was mentioned the other day as well. But I just mean the ISP can spot Tor traffic. Like they can't see what's in it, but they can see that's an encrypted stream with these qualities that looks like a Tor stream, and then I guess they would be legally obliged to report you for using Tor or something like that.
I guess we all better start using Tor then, and then they can't report us all.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, exactly. Also, the VPN thing, like they can make VPNs illegal, but I could set up an Oracle server. I'm not recommending Oracle. I say Oracle because it's free and I'm poor. I could set up an Oracle server in wherever, install a VPN server on that server, and then just VPN into it. Like, you don't need a VPN service to have a VPN.
Well, there are benefits to a VPN service. So, for example, switch out.
If I just literally wanted it to get around this law, I could do that. You know.
Yeah, but isn't it going to be expensive because the amount of through traffic you're going to get is quite a lot, right?
I think generally these VPSs have very high traffic. I actually did that for a while. I did that on DigitalOcean many years ago just to see if I could do it, really, just to see if I could set up a VPN. It was OpenVPN back then, but it was before WireGuard. And I just set it up and just used it because why not? And I think I used it for several months and didn't hit issues.
And that was on like the lowest tier or something?
Yeah, it was on like the Fiverr a month tier, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh my God, what if they start then making hosting your own shit illegal?
I mean, that would be where they'd have to go, but then where, what, how, like...
How would business operate?
Yeah, like, you know, a small sole trader who's got a website, is that illegal then?
My guess is that, I don't know, I don't... This is it, how far are they going to go? That's the big worry of mine. Mm. Like, yeah, I worry about people that are on social media these days a lot, you know, because of all the stuff that, like, oh, you said this 5 years ago, you can't get a visa from wherever or whatever. Mm. I mean, I've scrubbed all my Twitters, my Facebooks, Instagrams, anything like that. The only thing I'm on is Masto and YouTube now, I think.
But that in itself is terrifying, the fact that we have to be vigilant and scared about this stuff. It's not...
Well, this is sort of...
It's so far away from what we imagined the internet would be. Do you know what I mean?
I don't want to sound too much like... See, we had this talk about... I think someone was talking about communism and anarchism in the chat the other day. Like, what's the difference? And you said something like, communism is basically, because it's a million and one definitions of it, is it something like the proletariat acquire the state apparatus... And then they like improve living and working conditions, and then the state dissolves into a stateless, classless society. Right? Is that
fundamental? Yeah, so that's the vanguardist approach to how you get to communism. Yeah,
and with anarchism, you just go to the final step of just getting rid of this.
You mistakenly think that you can go straight to the final step. Yeah,
I would imagine anarchists probably would maybe disagree with that.
They would disagree, but. None of them have got actual arguments as to how they kind of like libertarians. They just imagine it would work.
They have catchphrases. That's one thing I have noticed about anarchists. They have great catchphrases.
Like what?
I can't remember now. Like Orwell stuff, you know. Even though Orwell wasn't an anarchist, in fact, didn't like Orwell. Wasn't he a snitch or something?
Yeah, I mean, he claims to be a socialist and communist at various times, but he literally reported on gay colleagues to the intelligence services because they would be, they thought back then that, you know, gay people would be more at risk of recruitment from the Soviet Union. So he was an absolute piece of shit, yeah.
I actually, interestingly enough, one of the reasons why me and Rosie sort of decided, like, seriously up the consideration for me getting a vasectomy is because I think Nigel Farage is starting to talk a little bit about abortions now. And he's trying to...
I don't think that'll fly here. I think they keep trying to do this. They keep trying to bring the American culture war stuff to here, and we just don't have the political context for it. We're not that country. We're not America. We don't have that religious right wing.
I hope you're right. But...
they failed to do it with the trans stuff, which is a much easier sell.
We are a turfy place, though.
We've got a lot of asshole, prominent asshole turfs. But in terms of a general public understanding of these things, we're not anti-trans. I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, we're great, but we're not. I mean, America isn't actually. When you poll people, but their Christian right props that stuff up is the thing, within, you know, in the culture. But we don't have that.
I
mean, they tried to do it and it failed here. So I think they'll fail even harder with abortion.
Well, I think with American, I think like your rank and file American are probably not that they like. I feel that they've got that kind of that individualist mentality of I don't really care about other people as long as they're not affecting me kind of thing. You know, individualism, sort of libertarian-ish. And so even though there's a lot of prominent TERFs in the States and a lot of prominent TERF lawmakers in the States, your average American, I think, is probably relatively indifferent to a trans person.
They're probably about the same as us, which isn't bad. The problem is that the American Christian right have such political power because essentially, you know, the Republican Party need them for their electoral coalition. You have to keep them on board, and those are the things you keep them on board with. But whether it cuts through to, you know, it's...
Keir Starmer's a bit turfy.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely, yeah. But at federal level in America, I think government level here... They're not. I don't think they're going to actually legislate about it.
You think he's just like Starmer's just going to try and sort of court the fash a bit?
Yeah, I mean that's clearly Starmer's strategy. He thinks he can win the next election by getting reform on board by being evil. When you know, ironically, the reform electorate, if you can even call them that, because it's so contingent, I think, in short term. Respond very well to socialism and socialist policies.
And also, they are against the OSA, which is going to give Nigel Farage a whole bunch of fucking support.
Yeah. Oh, no, Labour, like, they couldn't be... The strategy could not be worse. I say the strategy could not be worse, but this is not unintentional. They would rather have this. They would rather make themselves politically irrelevant for the next 15 years than have a whiff of socialism. They will do anything. It's the same as, you know, wrecking Sanders. It's the same as wrecking Corbyn. They will do anything other than let socialism in.
They'd rather have Trump than Sanders.
They'd rather have Farage than...
It's like they'd rather lose with Hillary than win with Sanders, is the Democrats.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because, of course, I read a tweet the other day, and it just so fucking sunk in. Who's the New York mayor guy? Is it the New York mayor guy, Mamdani? Is that his name?
Mamdani, yeah.
Yeah? Where are all those vote blue no matter who people now, eh?
How do you mean?
Well, you know, it's like vote blue no matter who. It's like no matter who's on the ticket.
He's a Democrat, though.
Yeah, he is a Democrat. Yeah. And it's like, vote for the lesser of two evils and shit like that. Yeah. Right? You know, it's like, oh, I know Hillary's not great, but she's a lesser of two evils. I know Biden's not great. He's a lesser of two evils. I know Kamala's not great, but she's a lesser of two evils. Well, what about Mamdani now?
He's probably far too left-wing for them. And they want they wanted a bit more of an evil. We want a lesser of evil, not a good.
Exactly. Those people really are fucking quiet now.
I'm worried about Mamdani that he might go the same way as AOC and all of the squad went, apart from that one who actually stuck to her guns and just be completely...
Omar. Ilhan Omar?
Omar? She's done shit as well. It's the other one. The third one.
With the guy?
No, it's a lady. Let me...
I mean, I don't. Even though they've, you know, softened on issues that we wish they had, didn't.
Talib. Yeah, that's the one. She's actually still okay, but all the others have caved entirely.
Entirely, no. Caved somewhat, yes.
100.
No, I'd still.
They're just Democrat Party. People now.
They're just trying to navigate a fucking system that is so rigged against them. They can be indignant and lose. Like, don't get me wrong.
They didn't do the force of vote thing with Pelosi, which would have been just a smart thing to do. And they're voting for more weapons to Israel. Like, what? If they're caving on that, it doesn't really matter the little fucking things that they're sticking to the guns on rhetorically, because it's always rhetorical, never actually in any fucking material way.
Fine. Well, I don't think Mamdani's going to... I don't know. Oh, my God. It's the fucking naivety of hope, isn't it? Like, Tulsi Gabbard fooled me. And she turned out a bit fucking such a grifter. I fell for her hook, line, and sinker.
I think for a long time we were so desperate for just anybody who even looked like they were going to. I mean, even Bernie's such a huge fucking disappointment now. On you know, particularly on the Israel stuff. He's fucking awful. And he was awful during the election when he was like, Biden's great.
Yeah, but
even in the Democratic Party, he's an independent. He doesn't have to fucking toe the line.
Yeah, but you know what AIPAC are like? They will just fucking torpedo anyone. Like, the thing is, right, it's almost a case of, like, political version of natural selection. Anyone that is too good on Palestine will just get nixed, right? They did try with...
That's the Chomsky thing, isn't it? The famous little video snippet that everybody, when he's talking
What we are seeing in American politics is everyone who just survives that filter, right? Bernie and AOC might just be the best people that survive that filter.
That filter only exists if you believe it exists, kind of thing.
Yeah, but that's like 99% of...
As Trump has kind of proved. Like, Trump doesn't give a fuck.
I don't think Mamdani gives a fuck.
I hope not. I hope he doesn't give a fuck. But I guess we will say... I'm hopeful. I am hopeful, but I'm not the other thing.
Yeah, we've been hopeful before. I think I have lower expectations than you. I don't know if that's a good thing. I definitely feel a bit more naive, but...
Lower expectations slash more realistic, maybe.
I hope not. Like, I don't know.
I mean, if you stick to the thing, there's one disappointing thing. I forget the names because it's American politics, and you know it's not our everyday. Mm. But there's a certain person in charge of the New York Police at the moment, and she's awful politically. And he said a lot of things about the police during his campaign, but he's also said he'll keep her in charge, which seem to be two things that are at odds. But we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, we know these things are... I don't want to, like, be an excusenist. Excusenist? I don't want to, like... There's a word that I'm thinking of where you excuse... Apologist, that's it. These things are always more complicated, aren't they? Like, than... You know, it might be the shrewd thing to do.
I do understand that when you get in, especially if you remember, and this is why they shouldn't be Democrats. This is why it should be a third party, as we finally got here. But putting that aside, I understand that they have to deal on certain things and they have to choose what's important. But the problem with AOC and that lot is they didn't seem to, they did the deals, but they didn't seem to get anything for it. They didn't say, this is the one thing that I won't budge on. I'll give you all the rest, but we stick to this one thing, like free tuition, forgiving student debt. The healthcare, pick something and say, this is the thing I won't cave on. I'll cave on the rest. That's fine. If Mamdani sticks to his guns on, it's not that he's got his New York mayor, he's not funding, you know, whatever, but so long as he sticks to his guns on Israel and the rent control stuff, I'm okay. Stick to your guns on the big stuff, cave on the small stuff, I'm fine with.
Yeah.
But they do the reserve. They cave on the big stuff and then they rhetorically take the right position on the small stuff without actually doing anything. And if he does that, then he's just another fucking AOC.
Yeah. But isn't he, how old is he? He's quite young, right? Younger than us.
30s, I think, isn't he?
30, yeah.
He's 33, yep.
Crikey.
He's a very attractive young man as well, which I think...
He's good, isn't he? He's got he's, you know, charismatic. It's, good looking. Yeah, he's... He could be good, you know. But yeah, I mean, there's a difference. There's a difference between what they believe in and what they cave on, though, right? Like, if you're a minority figure, like, there really is so much you can do, right?
I think there's more than they can think, because what is the actual sanction?
I have no
idea. Pelosi thing, it was no lose, because you've sort of got all the power in that situation. And you're making an enemy. I mean, that's what it is. You're making a political enemy of the person who's very important in your party, who can withhold things from you and make life difficult. But what the fuck are you expecting?
Yeah.
Like, if you're not going to do, if you're not going to take that fight, what's the fucking point? What was all that rhetoric? The rhetoric before, what cannot be anything but lies, you know, and that, or they all just get dazzled by the power and the glamour and the, you know.
Or beaten up by it. But the thing is, as well, and we see this with the Democrats and we see this with Labour, is that they're so much more attractive in opposition. Like, the Democrats are probably having a grand old time in being in opposition now. They have very little responsibility. You know, it is a pattern with the left half of mainstream politics forever.
The pattern I'm talking about is the pattern where, in opposition, they will say, I'm thinking in American context, we should have free healthcare, we should have free tuition, we should have all these, you know, we should have rent control, we could have all these great things. They will say all that in opposition, and then when they get into power, not do it. Partly because they don't actually want it, because they're capitalists, and partly because they want to campaign on it. So they don't want to win the issue, because then they can't fundraise on it.
Also, big key point is that Republicans right now have all three branches of government. They can do whatever they want. Like, the last time the Democrats had all three branches of government was like the first 2 months of Obama's term, who he had the sliverest of votes on in, I think it was like the Senate or something.
He could have done anything he wanted and didn't.
Well, he still had his own party to court. There are conservatives in the Democrats.
Yeah. Well, also, he didn't want to do it. You know, that's, yeah.
I think he did want to do it. I think there were elements in his party that worked against him on anything too extreme.
He oversaw the largest transfer of wealth in history from poor black people to rich white people.
Do you not think that that's more now with Trump because of those tax cuts?
With the bank bailout.
Oh, okay, with the blank bailout. Yeah, well, that's bad. I can't argue against that.
I think that's one of the worst things an American president has ever done, and it's one of the worst things that's ever happened to working class black people. And it was done by America's first black president, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the similar dynamic happened here?
Yeah, like, yeah, but the situation wasn't so bad here. Like, because, you know, our deregulation didn't go quite as deep as America's deregulation. It wasn't as severe, but yeah, it was the same. It was the same.
I mean, LIBOR scandal was pretty bad.
For the cost of bailing out the banks, they could have bailed out the mortgage holders.
Yeah.
And then everybody gets to keep their house, and also the bank gets the money in the end, because that's what they will do, you know. But they specifically chose to make all these people homeless and bail out the banks. They chose that outcome.
That is the remarkable thing about wealth distribution that I don't understand why we all can't get on board with. Universal basic income is like the simple example here, but it applies to any kind of stimulus, is if you stimulate the working class, that money filters up anyway. That's why trickle down doesn't work. It's going against the current. With kids, right, you get your child, it's not child tax. Is it child tax credit? Child benefit, right? Yeah. Although for some reason, they're fucking limiting that now. It's like all of that money. Like, do you know how much fucking car seats cost and school uniforms? Mm-hmm. School uniforms, whole other racket as well. Don't get me started on school uniforms, right? You don't need a school uniform.
A thing that compounds the insanity of that is, this is why capitalists do want UBI, because it is a permanent fiscal stimulus. We'll all spend it on goods. Like, the rich, you give the rich money, as they are doing currently, and they don't spend it, they save it, or they put it in assets. If we are given money, the poor, we'll spend it on goods, and it will go to the capitalists, so of course they want it. But the other thing is, when the government spends money, they get, for every pound they spend, I think the last I checked that on memory, but it's something like this, for every pound they spend, they get £1.75 back.
That makes sense.
Because when they spend, you know, if they build a hospital or a bridge or whatever, they, you know, they pay the construction company, or, you know, the company that pays the construction, they pay the construction company, they're buying materials, they're, you know, that's going into a shop where they buy, you know, food, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Basically, that money gets spent multiple times and it gets taxed multiple times.
Yeah.
So when government spends money, they make money.
Yeah.
That's absent the argument about, you know, the fucking balance sheet bullshit.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. It's when people think, oh, we're going to spend money on schools, that money just fritters into thin air and disappears.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you know, it's especially considering how big of an employer the US government is in particular.
That's also when the government talks about its balance sheet, which is bullshit anyway, but when they talk about their balance sheet, I think this is right. I think when they build a road, that counts as an asset. When they build a school or a hospital, that counts as a liability.
That's ridiculous.
Like they're literally rigging the game to, you know, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, well, do you want to play some Div?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, all right, we'll wrap it up there. That's...
We got from window managers to that, but it happened.
There we go. Well, you know, because we don't do Dargoth Hour now, because we just... the distinction between Dargoth Hour and Freeboot is just doesn't... Yeah.
No.
This is, yeah. But we still need to do the last Space Virgins as well. I need to rewatch the Space Virgins.
I need to watch the episodes as well. We need to knock that out so me, you, and Hamish can get to doing something we're more interested in.
Yeah, sorry, Hamish. I'll do a rewatch as soon as I can, and we'll get on it. Awesome. All right, folks. Toodaloo.
Bye bye.